Hey everybody, happy Wednesday. Welcome to episode number 24 of The Drop Set. I am Darren Starr, your typical host. Thank you for joining me here today. If you are watching live on Instagram or on Facebook, or if you're listening to the recorded version, either watching it on YouTube, listening on iTunes, Google Play, or directly from my website at Five Star Physique, wherever you are in the world, however you decide to digest this show, thank you very much. Thanks for joining everybody. Wow, we got a lot of people joined up already. That's cool. I guess predictability is important. When I'm on time, people find me. So lesson learned. I'll do my best. So it's been an interesting week. Lots of stuff going on. I've been keeping busy as usual. I've been keeping busy more with clients than with other stuff this week. So social media stuff has taken a little bit of a backseat just because I have a couple people that are getting closer to shows. We've got a couple of them that are happening this week. Shelby in Utah, Vinny in the UK actually is they're both going to be competing this week. So staying in regular contact with them, and then we got a couple coming up in the following next two weekends as well. So I'm not one of those coaches where I'll have go to a show and there'll be like seven of my clients all there. I mean, they're all over the country. So I see coaches like that who have like, five, six, seven, eight people all at one show. I'm like, how many people are you working with? I mean, and these are online coaches. So, I don't know. I couldn't manage that many people. I know what my limits are. So I have put up some more videos on YouTube. Every time I throw up something on YouTube, it does also find its way to my Pinterest boards where things are sorted out and organized a little bit better. So if you are a Pinterest-er, follow me there. Five Star Physique, if you search for that, you'll find me. And currently, all I have on Pinterest right now are links to those videos on YouTube. I'll be throwing up some additional content, some exclusive stuff before too long as well. Instagram, Facebook, the usual there. Website continues to get updated. I do have another workout plan that's going to be going live. I'm hoping today, if not tomorrow. This one is, I will just say it is Mortal Kombat themed, and I will leave it at that. So there you go. Nothing new on Spotify this week, but I do have those playlists up there. So if you are a rock or metal fan or you like some hair bands, go check out what I've got there. You can find me Five Star Physique on Spotify as well. So on Monday, I stuck with the tradition that I started way back last week on Monday and did a little Q&A live in the afternoon. I will be doing those and I will be announcing those early as well. I wasn't sure if I was going to do one this week just because it was my wife's fall break and I didn't know if she was going to have plans for me in the afternoon, but she didn't. So I did it anyway and it was very spontaneous. But we had some good questions. We had anywhere from half a dozen to 10 people in there. So what that means is it's not one of those, get in now at the ground floor. It's not one of those things where you go in and there's 200 people in there and everybody's asking questions and you're never going to get yours asked. I mean, at this stage, it was one of those where if you were asking a question, it was going to get answered, guarantee. So let's see. At this point, I want to go ahead and talk about our topics that will be coming up soon here today and go ahead and put out the call for any kind of questions or comments on those now, and hopefully I will see those and be able to remember those when they become relevant as we get to that. So the topics that we're going to cover one of them is kind of two things in one, but we're going to be going over some details on meal timing just because I've had a lot of questions on this from existing clients, asking about what's important, how much do I need to worry about X, Y, and Z, etc. And then I also want to revisit macronutrients a little bit. So if you go back in the episode archives, you'll see we've done a macros 101, we've done a macros 102, which were more the nuts and bolts, like how do you actually do this thing, how do you track your macros, etc. What I want to do this week is talk a little bit more about when it is and isn't a good time to do that. So we can dig into that a little bit. And then I also want to have a fun chat about bodybuilding fads. So not fitness fads, bodybuilding fads. So like the shake weight was never a bodybuilding fad. Those little electroshock stimulus ab belts, those were never a bodybuilding fad. So we're not going to talk about those. We're going to talk about things that pertain specifically to bodybuilding. And, I'll be honest, some fads have a little merit. So you'll get my take on those, and we'll talk about that soon. So if you have anything to contribute to either of those, fire over a comment now or save it for the discussion either way. So Let's see, the week that was for me. So, you know, I'm on my updated and revised diet and training program. It's going pretty well overall. I don't have any complaints. I would say my overall weight is holding relatively steady as I eat a ton more food, which is always interesting to see and always curious. But I can tell that things are tightening up a little bit, which is cool. So I won't bore everybody with further details there. So I wanted to go over, much like we did last week, we had a section on a bodybuilding myth. And what I did was I found an article that somebody had posted online where they had broken down a myth, and then I broke down their breakdown of it, basically. So I'm going to do the same thing here. So I went to the bastion of all things bodybuilding, which is foxnews.com. So, I mean, seriously, I searched for bodybuilding myths on Google and this Fox News article came up. So I knew, I mean, you know, regardless of your political views or your views on the media, I knew that Fox News was going to be easy fodder when it comes to a bodybuilding article. So but it does give me a little bit of insight as to, you know, this is what the population in general thinks about bodybuilding. So both as far as their perception of it, and then if they're trying to break myths, you know, how accurate are their Mythbusters, basically. So the first myth they broke down, they said, always work a muscle to failure. False. Don't do that. And I mean, sure, just because always is a very definitive thing, which means every set you're going to failure. You can't do that. If you can, you're going to find that your workouts are very short, and your bodybuilding lifespan is also very short. So you've got to pick and choose your spots as far as when to go to failure. That's pretty easy. More weight means bigger muscles. They judge that as false. I would totally agree with that. So, wow, I am on the same page as Fox News. Who would have thought? But sure, I mean, we've talked about this before. You know, bodybuilding is all about working the muscle. It's not about moving the weight. That is powerlifting. Those are two very different things. So that's kind of easy fodder. Now, their next myth is you must eat more to get bigger. They judge that as being false. I don't know how you build muscle in the long term without eating more. I mean, you can train like a beast, but there comes a point where, you know, unless you are, I always struggle with the nicest way to say this, unless you're a newbie, like you've just started training, in which case you can basically just walk by the dumbbell rack and put on 2 or 3 pounds of muscle. You don't have to kill yourself, which is where a lot of people develop problems, because they go into the gym and they lift like a jackass, just terrible form, no idea what they're doing, but they get some kind of response anyway. And so then they think, hey, great, this is working. And then that's what they learn to do. And their results are completely skewed by the fact that pretty much anything that you do when you first start out is going to have a positive impact on your physique. So learn to do it the right way. But there comes a point once you get past that phase, I mean, once you kind of reach your natural plateau, I guess you could say, I mean, if you want to continue putting on size, you've got to eat more. That's simply all there is to it. So, they say time off from the gym means instant fat gains. They judge that to be false. I also judge that to be false. I also judge that to be a stupid myth. So I understand though, in working with people as a coach, a lot of people think that, like, if I go on vacation and I don't lift, I'm going to lose all my gains. And, you know, I also feel like, okay, great, if this is what we're talking about, this is easy, because I can just kind of put my brain on autopilot and say my spiel on this, and it's really easy, and it's an easy conversation, put your mind at ease, and that's all there is to it. But I know that a lot of people think that. It's a very common thing to feel like, you know, you've got to go all the time. Every day's got to be perfect. Every workout's got to be the best. You can't take any time off, or else you're just going to shrink and shrivel up and die. And I think deep down inside, the people that think that know that it isn't true. But bodybuilding does encourage this harder is better mentality, which is true up to a point. And if you do that at the expense of any kind of rest or any kind of balance in your life, you're going to find that you don't last long. Let's see. Gym sessions should never exceed 1 hour. They judge that to be true. I judge that to be bullshit. Typically, they should be around an hour. As far as never exceeding an hour, no. I mean, that's the same kind of absolute statement, like always training to failure. I mean, never exceed 1 hour. No, of course that's false. I mean, I can't remember how many leg days I've had that went over an hour that were very effective, especially if you're trying to do something comprehensive like that. You know, you're taking basically three distinct muscle groups, quads, glutes, and hamstrings, and trying to pack them all into an hour. I mean, it can be done, but if you give yourself a little bit more time and push a little bit more volume and pick and choose your spots, yeah, it can be really effective. And I would say it's practically essential at times. So work through pain is the next myth. And they judge that to be false, kind of. I judge that to be amazingly true. Yes, you must work out through pain, assuming that we are defining pain in the correct way, meaning the burning that you get in the muscle. And people talk about that being lactic acid buildup. It's actually, if you want to get technical, it's the dissipation of hydrogen ions that are a byproduct of lactic acid. But I don't have a degree in organic chemistry, so I won't go any further in depth than that. But that is, you know, when those signals that your body gets when it's telling you, God, please, for the love of God, stop this set, put down the weight. I mean, that's the stuff that really counts when you're feeling that. So of course, yes, we want to push through that. If you don't, you're never going to grow past that, you know, newbie gain stage that we talked about, where when you first join a gym, if you constantly stop working during a set when your body tells you to, you're never going to get anywhere. So yes, you've got to work out through pain. Now, if we're talking about a different kind of pain, like joint pain, bones, tendons, ligaments, stuff like that, yes, stop. You know, there's no value in pushing through that. You're just going to get yourself injured. But when we talk about pain and suffering in the gym, the assumption is we're talking about muscular pain. Like, God, I want this to stop so badly. I want this set to be over so that I can just kind of relax for a minute. That is the stuff that you've got to push through. So that is our myth breakdown for the week. So, and also because it is Wednesday, it is a new episode of the podcast, and there are still people on the planet who believe this. Spot reduction cannot happen. So, stop thinking that it can. If you want your abs to tighten up, you want your midsection to go down, you want to lose belly fat, which, God, those are the two words in the English language that I hate more than anything else, then just fix your diet, fix your cardio, be consistent, and put in the work. Do not train abs every day. When you do that, all you're doing is showing that you believe that spot reduction is a real thing, and it is not. So please, for the sake of all of humanity, stop. Thank you. All right, so that was almost a rant, but the real rant is here. So It's tricky for me because when I worked out at Gold's Gym, you know, Gold's is, you know, the bodybuilder's paradise, right? I mean, no, let's be clear. It's a very corporate gym. It's about as corporate as they get these days. If you go to Venice Beach, it's another story. Pretty much all of the other half a billion Gold's locations throughout the country are very, very corporate. So, you know, if you're a bodybuilder in Gold's Gym, it's like one step above Planet Fitness at this stage. So, you know, it's not good. But anyway, when I was going to Gold's, I'd feel very comfortable in throwing shade in the direction of anybody that was doing barbell snatches or cleans and dropping the bar from halfway across the gym. Just because it scares the ever-loving piss out of me when somebody does that. Like, I'm kind of in the zone, I'm checking things out, you know, I'm doing my set, and then all of a sudden, clang, from 800 feet away, somebody's dropping a 135-pound bar from up over their head. I'm like, what the hell are you doing? This is Gold's. This is not a CrossFit gym. If you want to do that, please, for the love of God, go to a CrossFit gym. Or Gold's is nice enough that they've got a little room in the back with rubberized floor that has doors on it. You can shut that and be less of a jackass, at least. So I felt very comfortable with that at Gold's. Like, that was the policy. Now, this new gym that I'm going to, they have an area set up where you can do this, and it's right in the middle of everything else. And I walk in today, and today it wasn't cleans or snatches. It was just deadlifts. I swear, this dude was there, and he had some amount of weight on the bar. I don't know how much it was, but it was enough that every 5 seconds when he repped it out and basically just dropped the bar from a standing position, it was the only thing in the gym that anybody could focus on. So to that dude, learn what a negative is and perform. I mean, you know, if you're going for one rep max, I kind of get it, sure. But you're repping out 10, 12, 15 at a time, get some negatives in there. And then I feel like there should be some kind of an alarm system that, that you know, at these stations where people can put push like a foot switch with their button, a button on the floor with their foot, and say, alert the gym, like, hey, there's about to be a snatch in progress, you know, some kind of gentle alarm that comes on. So everybody, you know, collect your shit, you know, be prepared for this. There's about to be some loud noise because I startle easily. And if I'm in the middle of a rep with something heavy, like I'm doing a dumbbell press, I feel like there's a very real chance that it's going to throw me off and I'm going to drop that weight on my face or something. So anyway, the corollary to this rant is all the people in that section of the gym who are practicing their cleans, and their cleans are really like reverse curls. I'm no expert when it comes to Olympic lifting form. I've certainly done my fair share of it. I don't coach it to people just because I work exclusively online, and it's, you know, for me, it's an impossible lift to teach somebody remotely. If you can't actually be there and do it in person, I don't think you have any business trying to teach somebody how to do a clean or a snatch. So I certainly don't consider myself an expert on it. So when I can, just walking by, pick apart 10 different things that are wrong with your form, you probably need some help. So stop doing reverse curls that you think are cleans. So, okay. So now that all of the preliminary stuff is over, let's dig into the meat and potatoes. That sounds yummy. Of today's podcast. So I wanted to talk about meal timing and revisit macros a little bit. So this is where, okay, I'll put out the call again for all those watching live, Facebook, Instagram, anything that you've got to contribute here. If you've got questions that we can address here, let's do it. So fire away right now. Meal timing. When it comes to meal timing, there are several different schools of thought. This section already sounds like a book report, so I'm sorry. I'm not going to start over, but I'll try and break from that. So you could, you know, if you follow like an intermittent fasting protocol, you're going to have a different set of answers here. My assumption is that we are following a standard for the lack of a, oh God, there's a spider on my desk.
Oh, Jesus.
can I edit that part out? Okay. Taz, you want to go eat that guy, please? Hopefully he's not poisonous. So I need a minute to collect myself now. For the sake of this discussion, I'm going to assume that we are following a basic, we will call it a, he's still here. How embarrassing. At least I didn't shriek like a little girl. First time for everything. We are going to make the assumption that we're following a basic bro science diet here, which I hate to call it that, but you know, something like, you know, eating six meals a day, typically something like that. When you're on contest prep, that is the default approach. That's what most people do. Most people do that for a reason. It's because it works. It's not necessarily the easiest thing to do. So, you know, there are certainly adaptations that you can make to that, but by default, when I set somebody up on a meal plan, that's the default approach. So you're going to have something pretty much when you wake up, you're going to have something when you go to bed, and you're going to have meals in between there as well. So under the guise of a plan like that, the meals that matter are your pre-workout meal and your post-workout meal. So everybody's a little bit different here. And I know, you know, you can find a million articles online that say that meal timing is completely and totally irrelevant. Nutrient timing doesn't matter. I think there's a lot of people that really overthink this stuff, but at the same time, I don't want to underthink this stuff as well and oversimplify it, because nutrient timing does matter. It does. And if you buy into the argument that it doesn't, it just shows that you don't necessarily understand how the body works and the specifics of bodybuilding and nutrient requirements. So if you're an endurance runner, if you are somebody who's just looking to get in shape, yeah, I mean, maybe nutrient timing doesn't really matter. If your goals are a little bit more ambitious than that, then yes, it certainly matters. And to say that it doesn't is totally short selling any possible results that you could get out of this. So So pre-workout meal, post-workout meal, that matters. So pre-workout meal, it depends on the composition of that meal, but typically you're going to want that to be somewhere like 30 to 60 minutes pre-workout. If the foods digest and process a little bit faster, you can go on the shorter side of that. If you get some longer acting starches, you know, slower digesting proteins, you can go more towards 60 minutes, just to make sure that whatever you're taking in, that energy is going to be usable and expendable as fuel during your workout. And also think about stomach discomfort as well. Some people don't do really well if they're moving around with a lot of stuff still in their stomach sloshing around. They can get that kind of sick feeling. So give yourself time to digest for sure. And then post-workout, anywhere from, I mean, you know, some people will, I'll get questions from clients who are just starting out. They'll be like, I didn't bring my post-workout meal to the gym. If I drive home and have it then, am I okay? I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, unless your gym is, you know, 2 or 3 hours away from home, you're going to be fine. So I typically like to plug in when I'm doing meal plans for people, just because I think about convenience as much as anything else. I like to plug in something post-workout more often than not that is portable and convenient for that reason. So just it's less of an issue. Not that we have to have it right when we're done with the workout, like, okay, I finished my last rep and go, protein shake. I mean, no. I mean, you've got realistically an hour or more. People talk about their anabolic window, and it's very commonly said these days that it's more of an anabolic barn door. I do buy into that. Absolutely. You've got plenty of time to get that post-workout meal in. The other thing, though, is if your appetite is a little on the sluggish side and you lift and then you wait a long time for your post-workout meal, the only problem then is everything else that you've got to eat now has to be done in a more condensed window than you would otherwise. And you may find yourself running out of time during the day to squeeze everything in. So if you're at a caloric deficit and you're starving, hold off on that post-workout meal for as long as you can, which, you know, maybe 20 minutes in the wrong circumstances. Or if you're at what feels like a caloric surplus, or it feels like, oh boy, you know, there's a lot of food in this plan, try to get it in as quickly as you can, just because think about what happens later in the day. If you work out in the morning, you have your pre and post workout meals, and then you're done, and then you've got, like, if you look at it then and you're like, well, I've still got 4 meals on plan, how am I going to squeeze 4 meals in for the rest of this day? That's a good sign that, you know, try and squeeze it in earlier. Like, my calories have gone up recently, so at this point, my meals are all looking pretty large. There's a lot of them, and so I'm shifting my schedule around where I will go into the gym a little bit earlier so that there's less of a delay between my pre-workout meal and when I go lift. So I'm going in earlier, and then my lift is about the same amount of time, and then my pre-workout, my post-workout meal I have immediately after that, because then it gives me a little bit more wiggle room to work in the rest of the meals throughout the day. So pre and post-workout are important. Otherwise, my encouragement to everybody is just space everything out. Keep your intake relatively even and steady throughout the day. I mean, your meal plan should be constructed that way. So if you have, you know, a meal that's 500 calories and a meal that's 100 calories, I will typically favor having things just a little bit more even, because that 100 calorie meal is going to feel like nothing. And you're going to be a pissed off individual once you're done with that. And 5 minutes later, you're like, I want to eat. Who can I go kill instead? So I like intake being a little bit more evened out throughout the day for that reason. If you're at a deficit, you know, how you construct things here. And again, this is a coach's responsibility if you're writing a meal plan, or if you're doing a macro plan, which is, you know, creating your own meal plan, then it falls on you as your responsibility. Especially if you're at a deficit, you know, protein intake, we want to be relatively consistent throughout the day. That's another another tenet that I believe in, just because nitrogen is a byproduct of protein digestion and absorption. And if you keep your body at a positive nitrogen balance, it remains in a higher level of a higher anabolic state. So for that reason, I like protein intake relatively steady. I like to avoid massive fluctuations. Like, don't have a meal with 10 grams of protein and another with 70 grams of protein. You know, go instead with like 40 for both of those. So evening things out a little bit. So protein's fairly steady. Carbs, we want to have focused around lifting time, pre and post workout. And then what I tend to do is save fats for other times, just to help bring the caloric value of those other meals up a little bit, since carbs may be a little bit less, especially, like I said, if you're on a caloric deficit. Let's see. And a meal at night, yeah, totally okay. Nothing wrong with that. So I think there's a lot of value in avoiding carbs at night, you know, unless you're a genetic freak and you really have the ability to you know, kind of work that off, so to speak. I understand the argument behind increased growth hormone output when you eat at night, especially carbs. For most of us, that's not relevant, though. For some people, they can realize a benefit from that. But for most people, the increase in natural GH production that you get from that is minuscule and not worth the calories that it would take to get it. Rose on Instagram says, question here, usually train 7 to 9 p.m. I've been keeping my post-lifting meal as just a protein shake or egg whites, minimal carbs, since I finished so late. My thoughts. Yeah, so that's an exception to the rule. Post-workout, I would say, you know, assuming that you've... hold on, there's more to this question, sorry. Regarding keeping carbs low post-lifting, however, keeping in mind you finish at 9 p.m., yeah. So that is, you know, kind of like the poor man's paradox. You know, I say poor man's just because it's relatively easy to solve. But it does seem to... take two contradicting pieces of information there. So what I would do is I would prioritize the needs of your body above everything else. And so post-workout, if you've, you know, I would always encourage people to save some carbs from their plan for pre-workout and post-workout, regardless of the times of those meals. So, you know, there's nothing necessarily evil about having carbs before you go to bed. I know some people will disagree with that. You're welcome to. And if you want to voice that disagreement, feel free. I will hear it. You know, reasonable people can disagree. It's all good. I think realistically, I mean, your body needs that. So I think it benefits you more having those carbs in a post-workout meal late at night than it does earlier in the day when it doesn't really have any direct impact on your performance or on your recovery. So hope that makes sense. So let's see. I'm checking my outline here to make sure I covered everything that I wanted to cover. I think I did for that. Yeah. The other thing is, I get a lot of people who will ask about cardio. So how do I plan my meals? How do I adjust things based on cardio sessions? The answer is you don't. Post-workout means lifting, and that is it. So, you know, cardio requires, you know, no specific changes on how we time meals or nutrients or anything like that. So the corollary, the follow-up to that is, hey, if I do post-workout cardio, then do I get my post-workout meal in before that post-workout cardio, like after my lift, or wait till I'm done with everything? And the answer there is one that's fairly common sense: after everything. So do your workout, do your cardio, and then get your post-workout meal in, because we talked about that anabolic window being more of a barn door. You've got the window there, unless you're going to do 2 hours of cardio post-workout, which if that's your plan, we should probably talk about that, because that shouldn't be your plan. But you've got time. You've got time to do it. And the last thing you want to do is get a big meal in and then go do a cardio session. You've got all that stuff sloshing around your stomach. You know, it's going to impact the performance of your cardio, and it's also going to affect how things get burned a little bit too. So hopefully that helps. So let's cover macros a little bit here. I think I'm running slightly behind schedule here, but I think we can get it in. So as far as macros, we might consider this like macros 103, so, or maybe 201. Maybe this is a sophomore level course. I don't know. When macros make sense and when they don't. The question that I ask a lot of clients, and they ask of me as well, is, you know, should I follow a meal plan or should I do something more macronutrient based? And I always say, let's try macros, just because you can learn a lot from that. I won't lie. Also, it's easier for me to manage. It's a little bit more difficult initially, just because there's a bit of a learning curve. There's a lot of auditing of people's meal plans that I have to do. Like, I'll want them to construct a sample plan for me, send it over so that I can take a look at it, and then, you know, do some actual coaching and say, hey, this isn't good. Let's try changing this. This here looks great. I like that. Let's do more of that. A little bit of this, a little bit less of this here. These numbers a little too far off. I don't think the database entry that you're using for this particular food is accurate. Let's find a different one, that kind of stuff. So I always push people towards macronutrients, just because it's more sustainable, I think, for most people, rather than following a set plan. It's certainly, you know, of the two binary options that are available, macronutrients or meal plan, you know, either one of those is certainly higher in precision than anything else, and that matters, to be sure. So they can be very effective, up to a point. And to be clear, I've had clients that work doing macros all the way up to and through peak week and into their show. And it can be done, absolutely. And what I'll typically do is, you know, perform a little bit more regular auditing as we get closer and start to pull certain things out and start to favor other food sources. But still, they're creating their own plan. I mean, they know what I'm looking for at that point. They understand what I want as far as meal composition and timing are concerned. So it can be perfectly fine. Now, that's not necessarily true for everybody. So, for example, if you look at the top level pros, I guarantee you they are not following macronutrient based plans. So the higher level that you compete at, I think the less and less appropriate it gets, if that makes sense. So when you're looking to achieve that really, really ridiculous, nasty level of conditioning, at that point, yeah, the quality of your food sources matters tremendously. If you're looking to do, and this is not to sell anybody short, but a bikini division, for example, the level of conditioning that you need to be successful in the bikini division does not require that every single thing that you eat be super clean and super high quality. For figure, yeah, a little more so. Physique, absolutely. Men's physique, classic physique, bodybuilding, yeah, it matters more and more just as the expectations for how conditioned you are on stage start to increase, or just your own personal goals, how conditioned you want to be. As those expectations increase, then your food sources and the quality of those food sources matters a lot more. So, you know, I divide it into sections, into segments and phases. So let's say you start and you're 100 pounds overweight. Okay, we need to lose some weight, et cetera, get you into the right kind of conditioning. Initially, does it matter how clean your food sources are? No. I mean, 100% of your carb and fat sources can be from Oreos, and then just throw protein shakes in there, do the work, you're going to drop some weight for sure. Now, as you get closer and closer and closer to your goal weight or something that would be considered like ideal conditioning, those things are going to have to be tightened up for sure. Some people can do that just fine with the flexibility that a macronutrient program brings to you. So a lot of people, they equate a macronutrient program with total freedom as far as food selection goes. And that's not true. I find that transitioning to a meal plan can really help with some people who have difficulty reining in the flexibility that a macronutrient program provides them. So, we've got to be cognizant of a few things. You know, I mean, you know, when you're leaning out, certainly getting a variety of fat sources can be helpful. So as long as you, under the flexibility of a macro plan, can do that and not just, you know, have, you know, 8 tablespoons of peanut butter every day for your fat sources, but bring in a variety, great. That's fine. You can do that. If I was going to write a plan, it would look like that anyway. So variety, I mean. When you're trying to grow, there's a tendency, just as carbs and fats go up, to just get dirtier and dirtier and nastier sources in there. And I'm not just talking about processed stuff, because, you know, you can do reasonably well with some processed foods, but like high sugar things especially, no, I mean, that's not good. It's not good. So, I mean, I wouldn't write that in a meal plan, and I wouldn't encourage anybody to do that on a regular basis either. So, and, you know, that comes from lots of experience, the experiments that I have conducted on myself and my high sugar diets. They suck. I feel like crap. I perform like crap. I look like crap. Don't be like me. So when I clean it up, everything's a lot better, a lot more effective. It feels like a lot more food. It's harder to eat everything when your calories are high, but still, it's very valuable. So if we're going to tighten up a macronutrient-based plan, the things that I would suggest are less dairy. Just because universally, well, not universally, but more often than not, dairy tends to cause digestive issues with people, even if they don't necessarily realize it immediately. It's very, very common. So more solid food, fewer protein shakes. When we talk about higher quality food sources, even the best protein out there, as far as protein powders, it's not going to be quite the same as if you're eating solid food. So chicken breast, ground turkey, ground beef, fish, etc. If you can tolerate fish, I would certainly encourage that as well. As I mentioned before, higher quality and variety of fat sources. So think oils, olive oil, coconut oil, residual fats from protein sources. So not just 99.1 ground turkey, a little 93.7. You know, that throws in a tremendous amount of fat. If you have the room in your macros to squeeze that in, great, do it. The trap that people fall into is they, you know, their fats get bumped up to 70, 80 grams, and they're like, sweet, all the peanut butter, awesome. No, more variety than that, please. And then also, as mentioned before, less sugar. So I do believe in macros, absolutely. But I also believe that there's a time and a place, and it has less to do with, you know, somebody's biology. Well, you know, how's bacon for a fat source? Great. Regular bacon, Dean asks via Instagram. Excellent. Yes. Bring it on. Bring it on. Saturated fats are good. We like that. We like what they do for the body. So, I think the struggle that people have with macros, it has less to do with, you know, trying to find a mixture that's right for their biology, and more to do with, mentally, how can they hop on and make a macro plan effective and avoid just turning it into a shit show with foods, pretty much. So, you know, certainly a plan like that exists to allow for some flexibility, but you've got to rein it in and remember that, you know, even if you're in the off season and your calories are high, what you eat matters. And if you just start eating like a normal person and eating all kinds of crap, you're going to look like a normal person before too long. So just remember that. Remember that. So let's talk bodybuilding fads really quick. So if anybody has anything that they would like an opinion on or to throw onto this list, let me know. We'll cover it here. So I want to start with one of the biggest ones and one of the most controversial as well. I'm probably not going to do anything to lessen the controversy behind this, because this is one that's definitely got a little bit of gray area. And so that would be, and again, we're talking about specifically bodybuilding fads, not just your general fitness fads, because we don't necessarily care about those. We know that all of those are garbage. Bodybuilding, maybe a little less clear. So I will give you fair warning. I am going to poo-poo on most of these. So the first one that we're going to talk about here, waist trainers. The biggest problem that I have with these is how everybody who uses one says they're fine, there's nothing wrong with these, and our basis for that is what they tell us. And you know, it's like, you know, this is going to sound like a very dramatic example here, and it's probably not the best, but it's like, you know, the smoker who's been smoking for 40 years and like, well, I haven't died yet, so obviously it's fine. That is the dumbest argument ever. So somebody says that a waist trainer doesn't fuck up the internals of their body because, hey, I'm still fine, right? I mean, that's incredibly, I would go so far as to say irresponsible, but it's certainly dumb. So yeah, I mean, you're literally trying to change the shape and structure of your body other than just muscle. So there's going to be some consequences there. Now, how far reaching, how severe those consequences are, I don't know. The other thing is, I mean, a lot of this you can just work for, you know, I mean, what it forces you to do is, you know, it forces you to be cognizant of what your diaphragm is doing. So that is something that you can do without a waist trainer. So I see people wearing these things and I'm like, no. And you know, I don't see a lot of value in it. I don't. Clients have asked me about it, and I cannot in good faith recommend anything that I don't feel very comfortable with. And so waist trainers fall into that category of things that I will just never recommend. And I know that I've got some clients that have used them anyway, and that's fine. You know, you didn't get the recommendation from me. So, and I won't tell people, absolutely no, you cannot, don't use that. I don't take a hardline approach like that. I say, I don't think you should. I don't recommend it. Do some research on your own, and I'll give them, you know, the why on my opinion as well. But it's not something that I recommend. Same thing with, you know, I mean, it's effectively the same thing, wearing a belt all the time, a lifting belt all the time. Same thing. I mean, you're just trying to, you know, squeeze things in, and it forces you to suck in your diaphragm so that you can continue to breathe. It's airflow restriction, basically, but it does have an effect of tightening things up. But again, you can achieve that just manually. I mean, all it is a device that kind of cues your body to do something that you could do manually otherwise. So I don't like wearing a belt all the time, just because I think it does give people a false sense of security, and it will encourage them to attempt some lifts that maybe they shouldn't. And for me, I mean, I wasn't about to go out and get a waist trainer for myself or anything like that, but I don't wear a lifting belt pretty much ever, because my skin is extremely sensitive. And if I wore one for, you know, when I've put them on before and worn it for 15, 20 minutes, I get a rash like you wouldn't believe. So, I mean, just everything breaks out and it's just all red, and it's just like, no, not worth it. So, not a fan of wearing a belt all the time. Just because, again, it's something that you can do on your own without having that belt. Just suck it in and hold and try that. And it's actually more effective, because you can certainly try and, you know, just kind of like break out of your belt, just let everything go. And at that point, it's much less effective. So bands, resistance bands, they have their place. I have certainly seen people that are under the impression that you cannot have a glute workout without using bands, which of course is ridiculous. Some of the best butts you've ever seen in the world were built without a single band. So bands are one of those things. And, you know, this applies to a lot of the things that we'll talk about here. They're nice tools to have in the arsenal for like a change of pace, but they're things that shouldn't necessarily be staples in your routine. So I see people who do like lateral band walks all the time, like they're doing that as active rest between their sets, where they wrap a TheraBand or a resistance band around their knees and they just, you know, take little steps here and there. I'm like, stop it. Just engage your gluteus medius some other way. Bands are not evil necessarily, but they are largely unnecessary. But they can provide a little bit of a spark here and there if you're just looking for something a little bit different. They can, you know, they're not evil. I will say they have a point, they have a place, but it's not necessarily as an everyday item. The same thing I would say applies to circuit training. So circuit training, I also put in that category along with active rest. Where you're doing some kind of cardio exercise in between your sets. This is busy work, kind of nonsense crap. And also, I think it's a compensation. So a lot of people will find themselves doing this kind of stuff if they feel like they're behind in their prep, and so they want to burn more calories. And I will say, for a bodybuilder, your training session should not, your caloric burn should not be your focus on a training session. Now, there are exceptions to this, you know, very advanced lifters who have been doing this for a long time, but the danger is that if you're not in that category, you don't necessarily know it. By and large, if you try and do active rest or you do stuff in a circuit training where a circuit where you're doing, you know, 8 exercises all in a row without rest, your form suffers and goes to hell, and you might as well just not be lifting at that point. You're just doing cardio. You're doing cardio to keep yourself busy, but you're calling it a weight training session. So it's happening at the expense of legitimate resistance training. So dangerous. Not dangerous like you're going to die, but dangerous as in you're being very inefficient with your time, and the problem there is you think you're being more efficient when you're actually being less efficient. So circuit training, active rest, there's a time and a place for those. I would say as far as the way that I program things, it is very, very rare when something like that happens and is appropriate. Saunas would be the next one. So I am a huge, huge opponent of using a sauna until it's like maybe a couple days before showtime. So I've mentioned this in other podcasts before about people who are, you know, 6, 8, 10 weeks out from their show and they're in the sauna all the time because they gotta shed that water weight. Like, develop an understanding of how water retention works in the body first, and then see if you want to go sit in the sauna. Now, if you want to because it's relaxing, great, cool. If you want to do it because you need to shed water weight, no, you don't. You need to shed fat when you're that far out, and the sauna does not help you with that. So same thing with sweatsuits, etc. All you're doing, if you use your scale weigh-ins as a measure of progress, which I firmly believe you should, as a measure, not the measure, then what you're doing with that sauna is you are throwing a monkey wrench into the usefulness of those numbers by really messing with your body's natural water retention. So you're kind of obscuring, clouding the waters a little bit, making those numbers harder to interpret. So stay out of the sauna. Ditch the sweatsuit. When it's time to ditch water, you'll know it because your coach will say, hey, it's time to ditch water. And you'll be like, but it's 2 days before the show. I've got too much other shit to do. Like, well, yeah, now's when we do it. So trying to do it before then, you're wasting your time, completely wasting your time. So the last fad that I have listed here, I just gave it the name of stupid ass exercises. So these would be things like if you look at like somebody doing a machine abduction where they're standing up in the machine or they're doing it backwards, that is a stupid ass exercise. Where you get on a leg press, like a single leg press, and you turn sideways and you do a leg press that way, that is a stupid ass exercise. Now, again, all of these things are okay in moderation. I would make the argument that when you're doing machine abduction, it's far more effective if you actually put your butt in the seat and do it there. With a leg press, I think it's probably a little bit more effective if you keep your butt firmly planted in the seat and do a lighter weight, single leg press, just with greater range of motion. Since you're using one leg, your hips are a little bit more free to move. I usually advocate a slightly shortened range of motion for leg press, but single leg changes that equation a little bit. So those things, you know, they're not evil, but they leave a bad taste in my mouth because they're what I would call the look at me exercises. Like, I'm doing something weird and creative because I'm awesome and I'm smart and, you know, whatever. And there's just not a lot of value in those movements. So the basics work. If you find the basics boring, then you're doing them wrong. That is the biggest lesson that I could give to anybody who finds themselves falling into this trap of where I'm always going to be trying something different. You know, if you want to do it just because it's different, cool. I'm not going to fault anybody for that. I do that as well. If you're trying something like that because you think it's like the magic thing that's going to suddenly like take your physique over the edge, it's not. It's not. So don't fall into that trap. I especially with people who are new to lifting, they say, you know, if they're doing like, you know, four sets of four exercises for a given workout and they find it boring, like, this isn't challenging, like, that's because you're not doing it right. Now let's figure out how to do it correctly, how to bring a proper level of intensity, how to focus on execution, how to really think about how your body is performing the exercise and make the most of it. That's what we should be focusing on. So that's it. Hey, Emily just joined. How you doing, Emily? You joined just in time for us to wrap it up. So your timing is impeccable, but it's all we will wrap this up. For Facebook people over here, hi. This will be posted on the Facebook page. For Instagram people, this video will be put in my story for the next, how long is it, 12 hours, 24 hours, however long they stay in there. I'll post it up there as soon as we're done here. And then I am also recording on the computer for the podcast, so it will go up on the website, iTunes, Google Play, and we'll get thrown on this Facebook video. We'll get thrown up on YouTube as well. Note also, apologies, if you watch it on YouTube, my Facebook Pages app that I use to go live with this doesn't let me, you know, when I have the phone in landscape mode, it automatically turns it back to portrait mode. So it messes up how it looks on YouTube. So hopefully they will fix that soon. It didn't used to do that. So anyway, thank you all for joining. Good questions, good comments today. Appreciate that. Stay in touch throughout the week. So you can find me on Facebook, Five Star Physique. You can find me on Instagram at Five Star Fit. Check out the website, fivestarphysique.com. I've got workout plans up there. You can read about everything else that I do. Contact me. You can email me through there as well. Check me out on Pinterest, on YouTube, on Spotify. Check out the awesome playlist that I have up there. So yeah. In the meantime though, everybody have an awesome week, and looking for any suggestions you have. I've got a couple of ideas for the show next week. So if you have any suggestions you want to throw my way as far as possible topics, please do so. Otherwise, I just hope everybody has an awesome week. I'll catch you back here next Wednesday.